This is football. I am Kevin Clark. Andy Staples is here. We're going to do something a little bit different because it's Combine Week. We're going to do College Football Week. College football is what we're talking about when we talk about the Combine. We're talking about college football tape, college football prospects, college football coaches sounding off. And so it really is just a college football type of week. Because of that, we have two guests this week that are college-infused talking about the NFL. What I wanted to talk to Andy Staples about is what's going to happen to the development pipeline, which is all we're talking about this week with the Combine, when college football's chaos unfurls itself. And it's already we're already in the midst of that, and it's not settling down anytime soon. So I want to talk to Andy about what this looks like, what it's going to look like, how this should kind of reverberate around the NFL league office, how the draft is going to look in 5 years. This was awesome. I learned a ton about where the sport is heading. It calmed a couple of my fears about just existential threats to the sport. What this all can look like and will look like. Here's Andy, ladies and gentlemen, Andy Staples.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, Andy Staples is here. He's with On Three. He is a Floridian. He's down in the warm weather. I'm very jealous. What's going on, brother?
I am very happy to be warm. I can't do the cold. Everybody's at the Combine this week. I can't go to the Combine this week because my kid has like 7 lacrosse games in 5 days. So I'm actually happy because whenever I go to the Combine, because I don't always go every year. It seems like I'm an every other year kind of guy. But Indianapolis seems to have record cold and wind when I go. So I'm not missing anything.
You're not. And I hate the cold. Below 60 degrees, I don't do anything. And my wife's always like yesterday, she was like, hey, it's 51 here in New York. Time to get you outside. Like, no. We got a long way to go. We get a long way to go until I go outside.
We Floridians put the heaters out. Absolutely. When it's 55 or 60 degrees. So you go to the restaurants and they have the outdoor seating. They put the heaters out, which anybody who lives north of middle Georgia is like, what is wrong with you?
Yep.
But we just, my blood is so thin that I cannot get warm at all if it's below 55 degrees.
I completely agree with you. All right. So we're going to do a couple of things here. I want to get into what college football is going to look like in a decade and what that, and specifically what that means for the NFL pipeline, because I'm fascinated by this. And I think it's not a thing we focus on. Like, the existential threats to college football is probably not something we focus on enough. I don't even know. I mean, like, and I'll get to this in a little bit later, but like, I think the NFL has one, like maybe a half of an eye on it, but not to maybe where it should be. But I want to start here with the fun stuff. Your favorite players in this draft, give me some, because for me, there's a cut of it. And I know Roger Sherman, who I used to work with, you always talk about this, like, college NFL scouts, NFL college scouts should always just like poll college football message boards and be like, hey, who's really good? Yeah. Because a lot of times a guy who's great in October, it's and the college football fans are like, yeah, we told you. So I always think it's kind of a funny.
Yeah, like who's my Jaquan Brisker?
Yeah, exactly.
Years ago, that was, I loved Jaquan Brisker at Penn State so much. He's one of those always around the ball guys.
Yep.
And he gets to the Bears, and he's the same guy. And it's so cool. It was Brian Branch was that guy for me last year.
Yeah.
The always around the ball guy. My favorite this year, and I think he's going to be a good NFL player. It's one of those – in the NFL, he actually probably fits better because of how many plays or how few plays get run in the NFL. But Tavondre Sweat from Texas. He's a 362-pound defensive tackle, but he's very quick. And he's just a huge problem, especially in the NFL, where you can play a guy like that 25 reps a game, and you're going to get 150% effort from him on every rep. Like, that's a scary thought if you're an offensive lineman.
I absolutely. And it's interesting. I think that there's a couple things right now that are interesting about the way that these college guys are coming in. One of them is that they're not testing. A lot of these guys are not testing. Malik Nabers is not testing, even though Malik Nabers, like Mike Renner was on the show on Friday saying he's going to be the biggest combine freak we've ever seen. It's like Jalen Waddle on a bigger frame. Marvin Harrison isn't testing as well. Any concerns about that? Or do you think that the college tape kind of speaks for itself when we're talking
about say Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers are definitely in the watch my film bra category.
Yes.
The guy I would like to see not test, just because it would be hilarious, but he just isn't that type of person, is Torrey Taylor, the Iowa punter. Like, he's the ultimate watch my film bruh guy.
Yep.
But he'll probably kick because he's Australian and he's nice. And they'll be like, because he's too utilitarian. He'll be like, well, why did I come here if I'm not going to do this? So that would be the ultimate if he just said, nah, I stand on business.
I love when the punters or the kickers do other events, like Pat O'Donnell, the former Miami punter, who like was a beast in the bench press. And it's like, there's no reason to do it other than to show people that you're a beast in the bench press.
Oh, that's to show the ladies what's going on. That is not for the NFL teams. That is for an entirely different audience.
You crush the bench press and you go, ladies, I'll be at St. Elmo's later. I'll be having a shrimp cocktail. Exactly right. I'll be right there. I'm ready. Pipeline question for you. So Saban leaves. And I think, I don't think anybody remembers this because everybody on the internet is 22 years old. But the beginning of Saban's tenure at Alabama, there was the book on him was that a lot of the players he was bringing to the NFL, like remember the whole story about how a lot of them were getting injured, they were damaged goods, they were overworked in college. It's like 2012, 2013. That all went away. I think that he just got unlucky with some of those early prospects. But then it became a machine as far as development goes.
I also think he adjusted. I actually remember having a conversation with him at the Senior Bowl. What year was this? This would have been like 2012, 2013. I'm trying to remember who the running backs were.
It was around then, yeah.
I think he had – this might have been when he had Derrick Henry and T.J. Yeldon. Kamara had just left to transfer because he couldn't crack the rotation. And I asked him – because I remember when I started – my first year out of college was 2000, and I covered Tennessee. And one of the big stories that year was this disgruntled parent released a lot of the handwritten letters that Philip Fulmer had sent his son before he decided to go to Tennessee. Eric Locke was the player. Juicy Locke was his dad. And some of these letters are like, I guarantee you 25 carries a game.
What?
And I remember asking, right, well, that's a very 2024 reaction to that. In 2000, that's what everybody wanted. And by 2012 or so, the world had started to change. But in college football, it still hadn't. People still wanted to be the man. They wanted to get the carries. They wanted to be the bell cow. But Saban was recruiting at that point already to a less tread on your tires kind of audience. He was explaining to backs, hey, we are going to stack our room. You may only get 12 carries a game. But if you ball out on those 12 carries, the NFL is going to like you better than everybody else because you will not come in with all this mileage on you. And that was something that I think they adjusted to. But that notion of Alabama players got overworked, that went deep into his tenure. I mean, I remember players who came out 4 or 5 years ago where you talked to medical people and people at the combine, they were worried about that. But I think you've seen now that those players are having long careers, it's not like they came in completely used up. So that is, and it's interesting because Kirby Smart at Georgia runs a very similar program.
Yes.
They operate pretty much the same way. And those guys seem to be doing fine as they transition to the NFL.
I completely agree. And also it's funny because there was a great story. I forget, maybe it was 24/7. Last year, where it was the players, if anybody's going hard at Georgia, it's the players. It's player led. There was a great story that late in the season, the year they won the first national championship, that Kirby just said, hey, we're going to dial it back. We're going to no pads, whatever. And Quay Walker said, everybody put the pads back on. And so there's a culture there and an expectation there that even if the guys dial back, they're still going to be kind of self starters. Do you remember the Jamie Harper recruiting story? What the first promise thing? Do you remember this?
I don't remember. So
Jamie Harper was a 5-star from Florida. Miami was in on him.
Went to Clemson.
Went to Clemson. So Tommy Bowden promised him the first
carry. He gets the carry in the first play of the Alabama game in 2008.
Yep. And Alabama knows this. Alabama knows this, and they just tee off on him, and he fumbled. He never made it. Whatever you do, promise 25 carries a game, performer, go ahead. Don't promise first carry of the game against Alabama.
Well, but remember, they're playing the Alabama team that's coming off a season where they lost to Louisiana Monroe.
Yep.
That's the game that announced Alabama's return to the college football elite. Like, I remember watching that game thinking, oh my God, this is, that was my first year at Sports Illustrated, and I'd gone to Clemson. I'd talked to Tommy about it because they were hyped up. They were supposed to win the ACC that year. They had CJ Spiller. They had, you know, a ton of good players, and Alabama just dump trucked them in Atlanta, and you knew something different was happening.
Yes. And it only took, now it's funny because Saban's first year is now the patron saint of every bad coach, where it's like, well, look at Saban's first year. He lost to Louisiana Monroe. It's like, no, he was building. Trust me, he was building something. Your crappy coach is not building something.
Every coach who uses that as an excuse, you need to ask them, okay, what's your second recruiting class look like compared to his? Because Nick Saban's 2008 recruiting class, I can probably recite it from memory, but I'm going to call it up anyways. Julio Jones was some guy called Feinbaum crying after Julio Jones committed on signing day. And it was probably not a bit. Like, he was being real. But Dante Hightower's in that class. Barrett Jones, who didn't have a big NFL career, but was a great college offensive lineman who played every position for them. Marcel Darius is in that class. Courtney Upshaw's in that class. Damian Square, Mark Barron. Robert Lester. These are guys that were, some of these guys were very high draft picks. Terrence Cody was a good player for Alabama, played a little bit in the NFL, got into some trouble. But like, it's insane what Saban was able to do. And you knew when he signed that class, this guy means business. Oh, by the way, Mark Ingram was in that class. Won the Heisman Trophy.
The Jamie Harper game against Clemson, I believe it was the week of the Miami Florida game. At least I was in Gainesville at that point. I was visiting friends early, so it may have been a couple of days.
Yes, Miami opened the season in Gainesville.
Yeah. A couple of days later, I remember watching that game in Gainesville. So that weekend, I was really taking it easy. I was visiting all my friends in Florida. I was really taking it easy because, like, I have an uncle who's a big Notre Dame fan. He never drinks on game weekend because he just wants to lock in. So I'm a young kid, and I was like, all right, I'm going to lock in because Miami had the number one recruiting class in America the year before.
Oh, yeah, the Sean Spence and Miami Northwestern guys.
And Ja'Cory
Harris,
platoon between Robert Marv and Ja'Cory Harris in the swamp. And they had all these studs. Marcus Forston was going to be the new Warren Sapp, the whole deal, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm taking it easy that weekend. Everybody's offering me a beer all day Saturday. It's a night game in the swamp. Everybody's offering me beer, and I'm like, no, I got to lock in. We start the game, and it's Aaron Hernandez, and it's Percy Harvin, and it's that veteran line, which didn't have any NFL guys, who were just mauling. Yeah, the Pouncies, but like Phil Troutwine was their left tackle. Like, guys, you know, it's like
Penn State's offensive line coach.
Yeah,
there you go. Who has like 0% body fat now.
Yeah. And so it was a mixture of just like nasty old players with like future NFL prospects every single place. And so we don't even cross the 50. And so I remember there was a right in front of me, Matt Bosher was trying to take a punt, and you could see like six NFL guys waiting to block it in the end zone. And in that moment, when I realized it was about to be a blocked punt, all I said was, I would kill for one of those beers. I would kill. Why did I? And now,
like, why am I sober right
why?
Now?
Why? Why am I sober? Oh my God. What was I doing? Why am I sober watching Matt Bosher get rocked in the end zone?
Since you brought up that 2008 Miami recruiting class, which was built on Miami Northwestern players, Marcus Forston, Sean Spence, Ja'Cory Harris, the really tall receiver whose name is escaping me.
Tommy Streeter.
Who was the best player team at the time, and in the future on the 2007?
He might have a gold jacket. So this player committed to Middle Tennessee State, didn't end up going to Middle Tennessee State, went the JUCO route. Brandon Shannon took eight players from Miami Northwestern, Brandon Washington, all these guys, right? So this player then ends up in Nebraska. This player is Lavonte David. And it is the most insane thing. Like, first of all, like, scouting Miami high school is always going to be hard. Like, T.Y. Hilton was also in that area at that point. Mario took him. And there were people saying, like, no, Miami should take T.Y. Hilton. They took Theron Collier instead. Like, it is impossible. But yeah, the Lavonte David thing is just nuts when you consider how many guys they took from that school.
When you talk to those guys, Bruce Feldman and I did a huge story on Lavonte and that whole team, that Northwestern team, before the Bucks played in the Super Bowl a few years ago. And if you talk to those guys, they knew Lavonte was the best player in high school.
God damn it.
That wasn't a case of he just developed into something later. Like, he was the dog on that team.
So, one story, I've told the story before in print about that team. So that team played my high school in the state championship game. Boone, they won 41 to nothing. And
poor Boone Braves.
I was kind of rooting for Northwestern because, you know, we got eight Canes on the team. And I'm kind of a neutral sitting in the Boone section. But there was a moment there where Ja'Cory Harris hurt his knee. Just someone ran into him and it looked serious, but it wasn't. And so... immediately the backup comes in and throws like a 50-yard touchdown to Tommy Streeter. I'm talking about on the first play.
Tommy Streeter was like 6'5" in high school. Like,
but it was a perfect pass. I don't know how he covered him.
Yeah.
It's a perfect pass. I don't know who the backup is. So like 3 years later, Teddy Bridgewater from that team is getting a lot of hype. And so in my head, because he's going to Louisville, then he's winning games, he's a Heisman candidate. In my head, I had implanted a memory that was Teddy Bridgewater. It just seemed correct. He was on that team. Somebody threw a perfect pass. And so I saw Sean Spence in like when he was with the Steelers, whenever that was. And I was like, oh, man. And then Bridgewater came in and Spence was like, man, that wasn't Bridgewater. Bridgewater was fourth string on that team. He was like, that was another guy. That was Wayne Times, or I think was his name.
Oh,
who ended up at FIU. Yeah.
And Wayne played in college. Teddy would have been a freshman that year,
yes.
I think.
Yeah. Teddy wasn't even sniffing the field, and yet he was the guy who ended up probably making the most money in that team. All right, anyway, we're remembering too many guys. The number one NFL development coach right now, Sue.
Probably Kirby Smart. I think you see the Eagles trying to turn themselves into Georgia North, and heck, N'Kobe Dean getting hurt was a pretty pivotal moment in their season, it feels like.
Yep.
But I just think that they look the most NFL ready. The way Georgia played, like I think about like Jermaine Johnson leaving Georgia to go to Florida State to show he could be an every down player. Georgia is so stacked; they rotate like an NFL team rotates.
Yeah.
So like these guys come in kind of NFL people when they watch it, they see what they're already familiar with. They're like, okay, and then. Like you were talking about earlier with George's practices and kind of being player-led and self-starter, like the intensity of the practice, the you might lose your job today factor, I think helps them when they get the NFL because that is every day in the NFL.
1,000,000%. And also just like you get – it's not just – when you recruit at that high a level – and first of all, like the thing I love, there was a Georgia personnel guy a couple months ago. I was listening to a podcast and I think he'd left. And he was talking about how they had to basically flag Kirby down when they first discovered Dylan Raiola because Kirby doesn't watch quarterbacks at camps. Right. He only watches the trenches and corners, obviously. But like he just wants the trenches. But when you're Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt, any of these front seven guys, not only do you have to worry about the guys who are in your class, you have to worry about some freshman who's probably the biggest athletic freak you've ever seen in your entire life. And the culture of competition is insane when you stack that many classes that you know that there's going to be a
Think about it. The number one pick in the 2022 draft was on their defensive line, and he was not the best player on their defensive line in 2021. Right. I mean, that's all you need to know.
Yes, correct. And then beyond that, there's I want to be careful here because I think the modern roster building uses the portal a lot, and all the great coaches do. But that core, that Georgia team, did not a lot of outgoing, not a lot of incoming. And now there is more incoming in this core. But what was interesting is I talked to a GM a couple of months ago, and I said, how has the portal changed everything? And I said, well, first of all, for a lot of positions, it's a good thing because you consider like how much better the eval and Matt Cassel would have been if Matt Cassel could have gone and played at Arizona last year.
Yeah.
These quarterbacks are finding homes. Wide receivers are finding homes. These guys are finding the field. So
it's different for offensive and defensive linemen because if you're good enough, you will win a job. It just might not be the job you thought you'd win.
Exactly. But the person said, if there's any negatives, it's two-pronged. The first is maybe a couple of prospects are coming in draft meetings and being like, hey, how are you going to use me? What are you going to, in the same way they go into meeting with, what's the plan here? And the GM was just like, no, that's not how this works. That's not how this works, man. Kind of a what can you do for me kind of thing. And that's a small percentage. But then the other thing is they said that you used to be able to know if it was a Saban player or if it was a Lincoln Riley player, whatever it is, that there was going to be a level of de-recruitment and that there was going to be a work ethic and there was going to be a football humility, kind of like what we're talking about, right? And that's not always the case now for some of these guys from these reliable programs a five-star if Saban or if Mike Norvell or if Mac Brown says, hey, five-star, you're nothing, the five-star can say, cool, I'm going to call Josh Heupel. And it's completely changed that expectation. Mm-hmm.
And you have to re-recruit your roster constantly.
Yep.
And some of these guys are going in with the NIL situation and hitting them up. And there'll be players who, I think my hammy's going to tighten up this week if we don't rework the deal. So, I keep telling players on my show, this is the best it's ever going to be for you.
Yep.
When you unionize and our employees, you're not going to be able to do this anymore. So enjoy this now because this is it went from the players having absolutely no leverage 10 years ago to having all the leverage now. There's probably a happy medium there, but it's I find it funny because I've watched, the fat cats in charge keep everything for so long. I'm enjoying watching the players torture them, but it's probably not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. I'd say that and the NIL part of it is sustainable because there's a long list of rich guys who want to brag. I think that's one. And there's
I don't think the NIL thing is going to last. Endorsements.
Yes.
But they'll have salaries, that's all coming. Yeah,
that is 100% coming. So let's actually get to that now because I think it's going to be a 3 or 4 year window. At some point, there might be a day, we had this on Friday. Nobody was expecting that ruling on Friday. Obviously, everybody knew about the case. There were people, Tennessee fans wanted to go tailgate in the parking lot of the hearing. I knew about the hearing, but I didn't anticipate the ruling on Friday. So basically, it said that the NCAA cannot enforce the NIL rules, which to me, Andy, it always felt, and I tweeted this a year ago, it always felt like they were running a very dangerous game by coming after these schools retroactively. Or not retroactively, but just punishing them and saying, hey, this, because there's a, to quote a Bronx Tale, there's a now you can't leave situation in the courts. Because you can do, when you're a voluntary member organization, you can do whatever you want. But the moment you go to the courts are going to go, hold on, you guys are set up how? None of this is legal. None of this is legal. And Brett Kavanaugh, of all people, came out during one of the cases a couple of years ago and basically said, I can't wait to rule everything you do to be illegal. There's a precedent.
And the thing is, he knows they're never, the Supreme Court may never see another case.
Yes.
They ruled so emphatically.
Yes.
That it's probably only going to get to the Circuit Court of Appeals from now on because they just said it was 9-0. So, I just think it's an incredible needle to thread. The schools in the NCAA have managed to do this in one of the most divided times politically in American history. You've managed to make the left and the right hate you for different reasons. And it's just they thought that people like Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh were going to be their best friends and turned out to be their worst enemies. And I'm like, why do you think what made you think that people who like open markets are going to like your horizontal price fixing scheme?
Yep. Yep. Also, there's so much here. Part of this is that The reason the rules don't make any sense now is that the rules have never made any sense. And this is an attempt to paper over those rules. It'd be like, right. So let's say, all of college football is like this. Let's say there's a movie and it doesn't make any sense. And it's just completely thrown together, but it becomes absolutely beloved. Beloved, okay? And then a couple of years later, somebody was like, I'm going to make this movie make sense. And it's like, well, no, you can't.
Isn't this what happened on Superman 2?
Basically, yes. It's basically this okay. is Superman 2. Like, I'm going to make this movie make sense, and you can't do it. And it doesn't make any sense. You're just making things more and more confusing. That's basically what college football is. You're papering over things that never made sense and fixing a sport that what we love about it is the chaos, but also everything they've done is illegal. Everything they've done. And everybody keeps saying, oh, well, there needs to be limits in NIL. How? You literally right. cannot do it.
And like, and the problem is most people didn't go to law school. So like when you're like, well, there's the Sherman Act and because it doesn't, and also the propaganda that the NCAA and the schools put out for decades, and people bought it. Like, think about this. They made people believe that it was somehow morally wrong to give someone money for being good at sports.
Right.
It's the dumbest thing ever.
Right. The people paying the players were never the bad guys.
Right.
Unless they were the bad guys. Unless they were separately bad guys. But the actual act of paying players is not bad. I mean, most of them. Let's be clear.
But hey, if we want to recast the bag man
yes.
in the Robin Hood role, I'm all for it.
I'm happy to do it. More with Andy after this.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
I'll put it to you this way. How is college football chaos over the next 5 years going to change what we see in the NFL pipeline for young players? Because for me, it's important to note that there's 5 years ago, there was record level of early entrants because they just mm-hmm. wanted to start the clock on their contract. They just want, even $300,000 as a late round pick and a camp body would have been better than going back for a junior or senior year in college. That's not happening anymore. They're getting NIL. That has changed that in the short term. But as this progresses, this will change the pipeline. How, Andy?
The players coming into the league are going to be generally older, probably a year or two older, because like you said, the risk of being a sixth, seventh round draft pick or an undrafted free agent and being a camp body and being a threat to be cut in your first preseason camp and it never comes back versus if you're a starter at a good school and you can make six figures doing that and know you're going to make six figures doing that. And by the way, get a master's degree for mm-hmm. free. Some of these, like, there have been guys who've gotten PhDs
yep.
for free. Like, I think players are smarter now about this stuff, too. So there are going to be a lot of people who leave college with 2 and 3 degrees mm-hmm. getting into the NFL. And they're going to be 22, 23, 24, and they're going to be fifth-round draft picks, but they're going to be yep. better fifth-round draft picks.
They're going to be doctors, guys see, so it's going to be fine. Yeah. It's a doctor fifth-round pick to you.
That's sorry. Exactly right. But the guys you see coming out as juniors are going to be the locks, like super yeah. elite, best of the best Marvin Harrison Jr. types. Like, because the quarterbacks, I mean, it's if you're a quarterback, the transfer market for a good, I mean, decent starting quarterback right now, you could potentially make 7 figures. These are guys that would have been like, I don't know, Will Howard, who's going to be at Ohio State next yep. year. He was at K-State. So Kansas State runs into this weird situation where they had a 5-star freshman last year named Avery Johnson, who's from mm-hmm. Kansas, who I can't wait. Like, you guys are going to get to see him this year. Mm-hmm. Like, the closest comp, and it's probably not fair to Avery, but I've not seen a quarterback this fast since. The closest comp is Lamar Jackson. Like, mm-hmm. decent arm, unbelievably fast. So they've got this guy, and he's local. Meanwhile, Will Howard started for them for 4 years, helped him mm-hmm. win a Big 12 title a couple years ago. But they have to make a decision. Do you start yeah. the local kid with more eligibility remaining or the old guy? Of course they go with the local kid with more eligibility remaining. So Will Howard hits the market. You know, Will would have been like a 4th or 5th round pick in the NFL draft. Meanwhile, he's deciding if he wants to be USC's starting quarterback or yeah. Ohio State's starting quarterback.
Miami was in the mix there, yeah.
Yeah, and the money's good. You know, the money you heard tossed around for a starting quarterback at the power conference level on the transfer market for a one-year rental was like between $1 million and $1.5 million. That's much better in terms of a gear. Like, what does Brock Purdy make a year? He makes like $1 million, right, as yeah. Mr. Irrelevant? Yep. In year 3 of his contract, like,
and cannot renegotiate because he was drafted. Right, if he was an undrafted free agent, he could have yeah. renegotiated early.
So that's keeping a lot. Like Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, Washington and Oregon last year. Any other year, they're gone in the NFL. Any other year, but in this situation, they're better off taking another year in college where they're going to make good money. And if they really shine, because the NFL people can say what they want, they can't help bumping people up if that person is in their feed, in their face every day. Like Michael Penix Jr.'s draft stock is so much better this year than it would have been had he come out last year. And he still mm-hmm. got all the same injuries from Indiana that will be the same red flags, that will be the same things that they're going to talk about at the combine. But I guarantee you he gets drafted much higher yep. than if he'd come out last year.
I completely agree. Probably a day two guy, it seems like, with Penix. Yeah. But, like, that's – and also, like, he's famous. And, like, that's the one thing – and I want to get to the NFL side of this and why the NFL should be concerned. I remember when Johnny Manziel came out. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of my editors at the Wall Street Journal was like, does the NFL ever, like, sit back and thank God – at how good college football is at generating prepackaged stars in a way college basketball no longer is.
But because of NIL is about to start doing again.
Exactly. And so, but for a decade there, we like the guys who were starring in college, it's like Jimmer Fredette, you know, it was like guys who just weren't, it wasn't, right. you know, I mean, and there were some, you know, John Morant in the tournament, like there were some exceptions to that, but like the Carmelo Anthony's of the world were few and far between. Meanwhile, on the NFL side, Johnny Manziel comes in as a prepackaged star that my mom and dad could identify on mm-hmm. the street. And that's, by the way, the reason you get 75 million people or 60 million people to watch the AFC title game, not the Super Bowl, is because of people like my mom and dad. There's a reason, like 55 million. I was doing it the other day, the calculation. You could add up all of the World Series games and the millions of people who watched it, and it would be equivalent to not the Super Bowl, not the AFC title game. It would be equivalent to the amount of people that watched the Thanksgiving Day game between Washington and Dallas. Like, yeah, that's what the NFL is, right? And so that's my mom and dad, that's part of that group, right? So like Johnny Manziel, Lamar Jackson, just like the guys who come in and it's like, okay, we know who these guys are. They're superstars, Baker Mayfield, and you already have that. So if I'm the NFL, if you're Roger Goodell right now, you're paying how much attention to the chaos and the existential threats that are going on in the college level?
None. There's no existential threat. The ratings are up. They have billion-dollar TV contracts.
What happens if there's – you don't think there's any way that there could just be a complete, at least temporary – like the courts say this
no,
is –
No, because
none
Fox
of this is
and
fair.
ESPN okay. would let it happen.
Right.
Somebody's got to have the right. make those TV shows. Like,
I agree. So – right, I put this to somebody in the league last year, and they said the brands are too big for this not to survive. What might end up happening is they might have to have almost like a peace treaty conference where everybody gets in a room and says, this is
the Super League. And that's the thing. Yeah. We already have it. You had the right. announcement 2 weeks ago. The Big Ten and the SEC are working together to work on big picture issues. Like, if you just told me 2 years ago the Big Ten and the SEC are going to work together and basically take over, I'm like, no way. They will never work together well enough. And that's because Kevin Warren was running the Big Ten. Greg Sankey is still in charge of the SEC. They did not get along. Kevin Warren, now the president of the Chicago Bears. But Tony Petitti, the new guy at the Big Ten, and Greg Sankey do get along. And those are the two most powerful conferences. Now, what you might see is because there's all this stuff going on. You have this stuff in the courts. You have the National Labor Relations Board declaring Dartmouth yeah. basketball players employees, which is pretty important because of the distinction that Ivy League athletes don't even get athletic scholarships. Mm-hmm. So that they're going to do that. There's another case going on. The trial just restarted this week out in California where USC players have yep. sued over the same thing. And if they win, they're going to have to make them employees. And I think at this point they need to, because they need to have a CBA so that they don't get dragged into court over everything. And I actually think they'll end up having to pay less. Like, they'll have real yep. rules. The transfer rules won't be so messed up. But the best way to do that, from talking to ADs and people involved, is make them employees at the conference.
Mm.
And so if you have this, you know, combined Super League where the Big Ten's the AFC and the SEC's the NFC or something like that, and I think it's possible that's where it goes. I would not like to see that. I like the regionality. I like the different flavors of different conferences, although the regionality is pretty much gone with Cal and the ACC and Stanford and the A. But I like the different flavors of different conferences. I like the people yelling at me, my conference is better than your conference.
Yeah.
It's the stupidest thing ever, but it's fun. And they might have to NFLize it. But if you took the top 40 brands or the top 48 brands, you split them into regionally equal and competitively equal divisions. You only played each other. Guess what? The ratings would be through the roof on that. Because yeah. that's one thing that the new SEC and the new Big Ten are going to show you. Because you've got Texas and Oklahoma entering the SEC this year. You've got Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA entering the Big Ten. Their schedules are so much better now than they were. Like, college football fans got used to crap in their schedules over and over and over again. And the NFL, every team plays a good team every week, even if there's no bad teams in the NFL.
But I disagree with part of this. I think the regionality is a much bigger deal than I think the TV networks understand. And maybe, and I've said this and other people have said it, like, maybe every rivalry we had in 1998 is just going to happen again. It's just going to be in the SEC third division, or, you know, whatever, the SEC, I don't even know what you call it. They can name it after, it could be like the old NHL yeah. divisions. You could just name it after, like, the Herschel
Walker. But I mean, division. If you've got Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State, USC,
right,
and Texas, Georgia, like, people are going to watch those games.
It fundamentally changes the product, though. It becomes a little... So for me, my favorite thing in the world, a couple of my best friends went to Florida State, and I have a huge respect for Norvell and what he's built, but my favorite thing in the world is every time this bad FSU news is throwing that tweet in the group chat and just saying, uh-oh, boys, back to the Cheez-Its Bowl. And if all of a sudden that went away because Florida State ends up in the Big Ten and Miami ends up in some version of the SEC, you know, 25 team SEC, whatever, that starts to erode. And I don't know anybody.
This is where I'd say the Seminoles could still lose to the Gators, but the Gators would have to beat them in a, you know, fairly recent period of time for me to say that.
I don't know anybody who went to South Carolina. I don't know anybody who went to Tennessee. And like, for me, everything sports like politics is local. And I don't think that people realize enough how much for me, the passion of college football is for so many people, it's not through the prism of, oh, Georgia is playing USC this week in some hypothetical super league. It's I'm going to go into the office on Monday and my cubicle worker over there went to Tennessee. My cubicle worker over there went to Florida State and we're all going to yell at each other. And I kind of
think
that
those big brands,
you have to protect that.
Because most of the people we're talking about went to those big brands or are fans of those big brands.
Yes. Or we'll watch.
They're
all
still playing each other. Like Tennessee and Alabama are not going to stop playing. So they're going to keep that part of it, but they're also going to try to bring in your mom and dad. Like, I've heard of these brands. Oh, Ohio State is playing USC. I have heard of those teams. I will tune in. Like, that is the part that college football has not done as well that the NFL does better. Is the NFL, now part of this is fantasy. And part of this is gambling.
Yeah, it's gambling.
Well, but college football can use the gambling piece of it too.
For sure.
But the NFL creates a better national framework. What happens to the Jaguars matters to a Seahawks fan. What the Jaguars roster moves matter to a Seahawks fan.
Mm-hmm.
College football is getting there with the transfer portal and all that, but it's not really there. It's not the same thing. It does not have the national framework. And I think that's the sort of thing that would draw in more casual fans. What they are banking on, and knowing a lot of really diehard college football fans, because that is my entire audience, is that those people will still watch. And I can 100% guarantee they will, because what the hell else are they going to do on a Saturday? Now,
well,
Raj has to be careful. Raj better not try to take over Saturdays. And I know they got the law and everything, but this gets back to your point about college football being the ultimate free marketing machine for the NFL. They don't need to have this weird arm's length relationship. Like, they should be simpatico.
Mm-hmm.
College football does the NFL a great service by creating stars to pump into the league. Like, you guys in the NFL do not need the draft coverage. So Andrew Perloff has a show on WFAN with Maggie Gray. Used to be on the Dan Patrick Show. I used to work with him at Sports Illustrated. And the year that Ryan Tannehill came out, he does a little story in SI and he says, I introduced you to Ryan Tannehill last year. And I'm like, Andrew, Ryan Tannehill plays in a stadium that seats 100,000 people at Texas A&M. There are millions of people watching his games on tele. You didn't introduce him to squat.
I love that. Oh, no, I love the draft Knicks being like, oh, wow, look at Josh Downs. I discovered him on YouTube. And it's like, no, you didn't. It's always that.
There were 60,000 people in the stadium in North Carolina that watched him the whole time.
Best guess. We're doing a pod in 2029, February 27th, 2029.
Yep.
You're not at the combine because you're doing every other year. You and I are significantly richer. Weirdly, I don't know how it happened. I'm just seeing it now.
The Magic have won the NBA title three times.
Two. They've won. Yep. Two or three. They made it three. One, two. They got screwed one time. But best guess on what, so we talked about what happens when they're employees, but everybody says, okay, there needs to be a limit on NIL. There needs to be a limit on the transfer portal. I think there's ways to do like 2-year contracts, or maybe you could transfer once.
I think that's exactly what you do.
So lay it out for us.
So you basically I don't think you do like an NFL style CBA where every contract just locks everybody in to something, because one, college coaches want the freedom to get rid of a recruiting mistake. So they want to be able to cut somebody or have their contract expire or mutually agree to part ways, because that's the dirty secret. They always cut guys. It's just back in the day, the kid had to sit out a year after he transferred. But they don't want to, if they get a player that they don't think is any good, they want to get rid of them. So they're going to want to have that option. And then the certain players are going to want security. Like if I'm the 20th guy in a power conference class, I want a four-year contract because I know that I'm lucky to get this thing. I'm lucky to be here because they might not want, you know, like they decide one guy in my position group is better. They're going to axe me out of this recruiting class. Mm-hmm. So I want a four-year deal. I want guarantees out the wazoo. If I'm a five-star that everybody wants, one-year deal. I'm going on a one-year deal, prove
one,
a deal
one
every
week,
year.
1 week deal.
Exactly. If I am one of those dudes, and I run into a lot of these guys who just know that they're under-recruited.
Yeah.
They're like, these people have no idea. I'd go a one-year deal on that one too. Like you go on a one-year deal with a group of five school and, or, you know, you max school, a Sunbelt school, blow up, ball out, and then you're cashing in elsewhere, which is what these coaches do. They just, you know, somebody buys them out of their contract.
Would there be a limit on NIL? Obviously there'd be a minimum.
There would be a salary cap. NIL would not be limited. Real NIL, what NIL actually is endorsements. It's what,
right,
you know, pro athletes. So the Lakers cannot pay LeBron what he's worth. The Chiefs cannot pay Patrick Mahomes what he's worth. Mm-hmm. State Farm makes Patrick Mahomes whole. Mm-hmm. Not anybody else. So in college football, you would have that happen. You'd have people paying them endorsement money. But right now, most of the money they're getting is because of, at On3, we call it your roster value, your value as a player. Officially, you're not allowed to do that, but everybody knows that's why you're paying these people. So like that's why I always laughed before NIL came into existence, because people would say, well, what's the best offensive lineman going to do when the quarterback's making all the money and you know, the star running back's making all the money? I'm like, you think the best offensive tackle is going to make less money than a running back? Like, that's not how football works.
Right.
And sure enough, it within a year, it mimicked the NFL salary structure. So I do think it'll be something like that. So they'll be able to do endorsements. So that's where people like your Caitlin Clarks and your Angel Reese's in the women's basketball game, who are the most bankable stars in that sport, not women's basketball, in college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
That's where your Caleb Williams is going to get deals. That's where like a guy like Terrion Arnold, who played corner at Alabama, who's personality plus, like he's going to get endorsement deals. But Alabama's going to pay Terrion for his ability as a corner. And so I think, and it's funny because you talk to people in college sports and they've been in this mindset for so long, they can't get out of it. They're going to try to start something and create a plan where everybody gets paid the same.
That will not work. I was going to ask.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. Like, especially if you're negotiating with the players, because the players are like, no, that's stupid. We're not doing that. And so they need to understand they're probably going to have to just have a pool of money, which if the players agree to the pool being X amount and have a cap on it, then there'll be a cap on it.
But what happens if it just goes back to the same system, which is that, okay, so let's say this happens in 3 years and Jackson Arnold is still in school.
Yeah.
And there's a cap on it.
Oklahoma's quarterback, for those who don't know.
Oklahoma's quarterback, who don't follow five-star recruiting. And Jackson Arnold is taking home all in $1.1 million a year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Including from this
endorsements.
Endorsements, yeah. But can't Oklahoma's fan base just do the same thing they're currently doing and just give him more money than the salary cap?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Where's the free money tree that's going to come from?
As far, like, you mean, besides what's happening currently now?
Nobody seems to understand there's a finite amount of money. Like, the money that's getting paid now comes from people giving it.
But the initial thing would be from the TV deals, right? It's like the initial payment, right?
So the money that, like, where the money is going to get rearranged is there are a lot of associate athletic directors who make $400,000 a year right now who don't do anything. Those people won't have jobs.
Right.
That money is going to go to a football player who actually helps make you money. So that's going to change. But the amount of money coming in, the TV money will increase, obviously, and the players will get a slice of that. They will stop tearing down and rebuilding their weight rooms every 3 years because that's stupid. You don't need to do that. Like, they'll stop building these palatial facilities that have massage chairs and because they don't need that. Like, because that before was how, that's how you recruit. That's how you get kids to come to your school. Well, no, you're going to do it the way every other employer does it now, and they'll be fine with a fairly nice chair versus a $10,000 chair. So a lot of the waste is going to get pulled out first. But in terms of donors, donors have been donating money for this stuff all along. They'll keep donating money for this stuff. It's weird now. Like, it's especially weird now. I feel bad, which is, you don't feel bad for millionaires and billionaires that often, but like, these guys are getting hit up doubly right now.
Constantly.
Like, the people who've given lots of money over the years to certain football programs, they're being hit up by the athletic department side. Hey, give us this so we can rebuild our weight room for the second time in 6 years. Yep. And they're getting hit up by the collective, which pays the NIL money. Hey, we got to pay these players. And it drives me nuts when I see a coach who's making $9 million a year go, well, if you actually care about us, you're going to give to the collective and you're going to give to the school. Like, stop that. And I think
you're also going to give to like the new soccer stadium. That was
exactly. Right? Yeah, well, and it's funny because a lot of times the donors are like, I don't want to give to the soccer stadium. I don't care about soccer. Like, I want to give to football.
Right.
And the AD's like, well, you just got to give to the general fund.
Got
to
get it. Yep.
All that stuff's going to change. And I just, the one thing about the court ruling, the preliminary injunction that invalidates the NIL rules for now. And there's, I don't even think that's going to get to a trial. I don't think those rules are ever coming back. The judge has already said in both the ruling granting the injunction and the one denying the temporary restraining order, he said the NCAA is going to lose the case. It's a bench trial. Like, he's making the decision. So if he's already said you're going to lose, you're going to lose. And so you got to work ahead here. They need to move the NIL stuff before they go to employees and salaries. Just move the NIL stuff into the athletic department. Yeah. Stop hitting up the boosters double because that's just tacky.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, we laid it out. We solved college football. Also, no 14 or 16 team playoff. Please don't do this. I understand why they're doing it. They're trying to. I know.
They're good. They haven't even seen 12 yet. That's my thing. Like,
six.
You spent
six
four
was
years
perfect.
Crafting a 12 team playoff. And before you even see it in action, you're ready to move to something else. Like, you people, you went 100 years without one when you needed one.
Said you could never
but
have.
Now you can't just
you
see if this works for a little.
Also,
bit.
You said you could never have one because of academics, because it was during finals, right. And now we're just gonna have March Madness. The one thing is, it almost shows you. It's like the whole thing, like, show me your budget and I'll show you your priorities, right? It almost shows you how at peace they are with the NFLization, in the sense that if you actually overexpand and these guys are only being paid by NIL, there'd be opt-outs or guys just being like, I'm going to get ready for the draft, or, hey, you need to pay me extra for this. Like, the fact that they're talking about 16 shows you that, like, they know there's going to be a model fairly soon.
Well,
where good.
Let me throw this at you. This was my thought when that stuff started bubbling up. My thought was, I don't cover NFL labor that close, but I've noticed when they are negotiating the CBA and the NFL, the most expensive thing is adding games. So they are going to lock in the largest number of games they can before they have to negotiate with the players, because it will get more expensive mm-hmm. when they have to.
Mm-hmm. We'll do the Windhorst finger. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? Why would they be adding games? Andy Staples, thank you so much. Check him out at On3. We can't thank you enough. This was great.
This is amazing. Thank you, Kevin. My favorite 407 buddy.
Oh, I got rid of my 407 number years ago, and I regret it every single day.
Oh, I've been out of 407 for a long, long time, but you know, my old 407 home phone landline was one digit off from the Jenny song, so it was
wow,
it was excellent.
That's insane. All right, I did not know that. All right, Andy Staples, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.